Today, I will be discussing the following topics on American Dissident Voices: the questionable advice of the gold bugs of patriotic radio, slave labor in Israel, and what American Jews are allowed to do that ordinary white Americans can't. I seldom talk about money and investment on this program. It isn't what I want to focus on. But when questionable advice is being vended in ostensibly patriotic forums, someone has to speak out, and apparently no one else is willing to do so. Patriotic anti-establishment radio shows are still a tiny percentage of the media immersion that most Americans undergo each and every day of their lives. But to those who have figured out that the major media are controlled, listening to patriotic radio shows like this one and the many others, both genuine and fraudulent, popping up on the shortwave and local broadcast dials, has become an almost daily event. No one who has studied the genre could possibly have escaped the precious metal salesman. They seem to be everywhere, hawking their gold and silver, sometimes sponsoring worthwhile commentaries or information, sometimes sponsoring frauds with a predilection for seeing flying saucers behind every cloud and evil fascists under every bed. And sometimes there isn't any commentary at all except a thinly disguised rationale for buying more gold. Now, I'm not against buying gold. There is a very remote possibility that the whole economic system will come tumbling down suddenly, and our trading stamp currency will quickly lose its value. And in such a case, it might be nice to have some precious metals to barter for necessities. Though in some cases, it might be better to have the necessities themselves. But while I freely acknowledge that America and the West are in a state of decline toward a Mexico or Guatemala-like future, I think the likelihood of a sudden collapse is very low. Right-wing cranks have been predicting such a collapse for as long as I have had contact with right-wing cranks, almost 30 years, and it hasn't happened yet. These right-wingers know, and rightly proclaim, that our enemies have largely taken over our nation. But they fail to see that the last thing those enemies want is an economic collapse. We are far more likely to see the elite get richer and richer, and white American workers driven into poverty and into the cultural margins. But the produce and consume treadmill is very unlikely to stop turning. It still turns in Mexico and Guatemala, for example. I fail to see how putting your capital into gold is going to help you much in this far more probable scenario. The argument is made by the gold salesman that an investment in gold will protect you from inflation, and that is true to some extent. We have had inflation in this country for a long time, ever since we gave the bankers and the politicians free rein on the money taps. And there is no doubt it will get worse as real productivity falls because of our increasingly third-world-like population. And there is also no doubt that inflation is theft, a cruel theft from the thrifty, the productive, from those who believe in the politicians' promises. Let us look at one area where the gold salesmen are right. Let us see how ownership of gold can protect you from inflation. I will quote from an ad from one of these precious metals firms. The company itself shall remain nameless. Quote, "Gold, the only real money. In 1933, $560 cash would be enough money to buy yourself a new Ford Deluxe. Or you could buy it with 28 $20 Liberty gold coins. 28 coins times $20 equals $560. In 1995, $560 cash would hardly make a down payment on a Ford Taurus. But 28 $20 Liberty gold coins could still buy one. 28 coins times $470 equals $13,160, close quote. Now this ad is true enough. They are not lying. Buying and holding gold would have protected you from inflation and preserved your purchasing power. But what they aren't telling you is that other investments, the common type of paper investments that the gold salesmen are so fond of disparaging, would have done better, much, much better, over the same period of time. Yes, if you had enough money to buy a car in 1933, say $560, and you bought and held gold instead, you would today still have enough to buy a car over $13,000. The gold would have held its value, while money stuffed in your mattress would not. But if you took that $560 and invested it in the average New York Stock Exchange common stock in 1933, you would today have enough money to buy 585 cars. Roughly $7.5 million. That is a return of 16% per year, which is particularly good because the gold salesman picked a starting year, 1933, which just happened to be the bottom of the stock market cycle. But no matter what year you pick, over the long term, investment in productive enterprise has widely outperformed investment in gold. Does that mean that no one should buy gold ever? No. A very small percentage of your assets might wisely be put into gold as a just-in-case hedge against unthinkable disaster. But don't expect to make much, if any, money with it. And in my opinion, it would be very foolish to put most of your portfolio into precious metals. You'd be throwing your money away. And I want all patriotic white people to have as much wealth as possible. We will all need it in the terrible times ahead. We will need it for ourselves and our families, of course, but we will also need it to fund the white resistance to the New World Order. We are building that resistance now. Investigate what I have said, and when you discover that I am right, send a donation to this program out of the tens of thousands I have saved you today. Remember, building the patriotic resistance is the best investment that anyone can make.
You are tuned to American Dissident Voices, an island of free speech in a sea of controlled and managed news. For a catalog of books, tapes, and videos that the censors of political correctness don't want you to see, just send $1 to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
You hear a lot about black slavery, even though it has not existed in this country for 130 years. You hear a lot about the slave labor used by Germany more than half a century ago during World War II. Every now and then, you hear about the slavery and near slavery that is still endemic in much of the Third World. You almost never hear about the very real white slavery that existed right alongside black slavery, though I have discussed it on this program more than once. Every so often someone will mention the slave labor that's going on right now in the American prison system. But I am almost certain that you have never heard of the slave labor of white people that is happening right now in the state of Israel. I am talking about white people literally enslaved by Jews. It was brought to light by a Jewish journalist in Israel named Shlomo Abramovich and published in the Israeli publication Yediat Aharonot in March of last year. In parts of Eastern Europe, the economy is devastated and white people are destitute, on the edge of starvation, eating by scavenging garbage. A Romanian man, identified only as Dimitri K., said he could earn only $95 per month in Romania. So he was easy pickings for Israeli so-called recruiters who promised him higher wages in Israel. What he discovered was that once in Israel, his real status was that of a slave, who is paid only what his master thinks will suffice to barely sustain him, and who has no rights whatsoever. Dimitri was taken to work at a metal plant in Ashkelon. When they were only paid about one-fourth of what they were promised by the recruiter, he and eight other workers there dared to protest. The workers were kidnapped, taken to a secret location, and beaten. They tied a bag over my head, viciously pulled me outside, and took me to a pickup truck parked near the entrance of the one-room apartment he shared with six other slaves. I did not see who they were, but at least one of them was a real hooligan. He swung me like a chicken and threw me onto the pickup truck. The beatings began immediately afterward. One of the kidnappers told me I was paying for inciting my comrades to go on strike. After the beatings, it was somehow arranged for Dimitri K. and the other troublesome slaves to be officially deported from Ben-Gurion Airport. After all, there are plenty more white people like Dimitri, starving and willing to believe what the Jewish recruiter tells them. The Israeli government admits that as many as 100,000 workers like Dimitri, many of them white Europeans, are brought into the Jewish state by such recruiters. The practice is technically illegal, but little is done about it because so many Jews profit not only from the trade in human flesh, but from the cheap labor and high living and high profits it means for some Israeli Jews. The Jewish author of this revealing report states that these people are, quote, employed under slave labor conditions in factories, workshops, restaurants, and in private homes. Employers exploit the fact that if the workers disclosed their working conditions, they could be deported. People are sold like slaves by one employer to another for large amounts of money, close quote. Slave women are used sexually by their so-called employers, but have no legal recourse except escape and recapture by police. If the employer has used the workers for a while and wants to get out of even paying the customary slave wages, no problem. He can just turn over his slaves to the police, and they'll be deported and out of his hair. Sadly, more and more white people from Eastern Europe are caught up in this slave trade by their own desperation. The recruiters promise a wage well above what is available in the wrecked economies of their homelands, which, in painful irony, were once ruled by Jewish communism and are now stripped bare by predatory capitalists, many of them Jewish. Now the Jews take possession of the people themselves. If the American government had an ounce of decency, it would immediately end all aid to the Jewish state and do everything in its power to help our poor blood brothers in Eastern Europe.
This is American Dissident Voices. Why don't you write today to the fine radio station that carries this program and let them know that you appreciate their belief in freedom of speech. Remember, the enemies of freedom never rest. Don't let their voices be the only ones this station hears.
In Perth Amboy, New Jersey, Jews are getting aggressive in trying to keep their neighborhood Jewish. Like the rest of urban America, Perth Amboy is going the way of the third world, with non-whites and especially mestizo Mexicans moving in and taking over. More than 62% of Perth Amboy residents now speak a language other than English at home. And Jews, although they bear a large share of the responsibility for turning America over to the savages, as far as their personal choices of where to live and work are concerned, act very little different from members of the Ku Klux Klan. They have moved away from Perth Amboy in droves, looking as it were for whiter pastures. Like the few whites left in inner cities across America, these Jews left behind in Perth Amboy are an aging and worried bunch. The youngest member of their Shari Tefilo synagogue, for example, is 48 years old. All the young Jews have fled. But unlike white Americans, Jews are allowed to do something about it, and they apparently have substantial sums of money to fund their program, too. Shari Tefilo Synagogue is offering $2,500 to Jews willing to relocate to Perth Amboy, and in their words, quote, revitalize the community, close quote. In addition, what they call pioneering families will, in addition to the $2,500 cash, receive a year of synagogue dues paid for them, and free transportation to exclusive Jewish schools. In addition, the synagogue will help arriving Jews find jobs as well. Is it possible that these Jews would give their fellow Jews preference in hiring for desirable jobs? Perish the thought. This sort of thing isn't only happening in Perth Amboy. Jews who move to Edgewood Park in New Haven, Connecticut, get $5,000 interest-free. In Elmont, New York, Jews escaping the results of what their ancestors have done to the former Soviet Union are given special benefits to encourage their immigration there. Joseph Voss, whose ethnic background I do not know, is the mayor of Perth Amboy, New Jersey. He stands 100% behind the effort to bring more Jews to his city. He states that the synagogue's efforts coincide with Perth Amboy's revival. Alan Goldsmith of the Shari Tefilo Synagogue states, quote, I'm hoping to bring Perth Amboy to a thriving Jewish community again, as it was in the past, close quote. Now, all of this was brought to my attention as the result of a glowing article in USA Today. Do you think the media would have given such a positive, upbeat account of this effort to keep up the Jewish population in certain areas if the principals in the story had, instead of Jews increasing the Jewish population, been ordinary white Americans trying to increase the white population of their communities? Can you imagine the media reaction if, say, Kevin Strom was quoted as stating that by his efforts, quote, I'm hoping to bring Detroit to a thriving white community as it was in the past, close quote. What would Dan Rather and Tom Brokaw think if the National Alliance was offering cash payments or $5,000 interest-free loans to white families for the express purpose of increasing the percentage of white people in a given area? What would Bill Clinton say if asked to comment on a National Alliance program which offered white families free transportation to special all-white schools if they would help keep the neighborhood white by moving in? What would he say to a program that promised good jobs to white people in return for keeping the city white? Well, you all know what they would say. I don't need to tell you. It seems that George Orwell was right after all. When all animals are equal, some are more equal than others. Why do you put up with it?
Breaking down the walls of censorship, this is American Dissident Voices. Send $1 and you'll receive our catalog of suppressed books and tapes, including books and tapes you can't get anywhere else. Send $1 to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
On today's American Dissident Voices program, I have covered three subjects briefly, instead of one subject in greater detail. I do this occasionally, but not often, and I'd like to hear what you think about it. Write me with your comments at our address, which will be given at the end of the show. Those of you who are online with your computers, please check out our worldwide website at www.natvan.com. That's www.natvan.com. There, you can download many dozens of articles and American Dissident Voices scripts and learn about a growing group of decent men and women who care about the future we are making for our children. In addition, every month you can keep in touch with American Dissident Voices and your fellow patriots around the nation. Every month you can have our very best radio programs in permanent, illustrated, printed form to read and share with others. Every month you can find out the latest schedule changes and additions and other happenings on our radio network. Every month you can receive quantity discounts on books and tapes published by National Vanguard Books. Every month you can receive advance notice of new tapes and videos even before they are released through our regular catalog. You can do all this by subscribing to our monthly illustrated publication, Free Speech. A 12-issue subscription to Free Speech is just $40, most of which will go to buy radio time to keep this program on the air. If we do not use our freedom of speech, we will surely lose it. In these last few years of the 20th century, freedom to speak means nothing if it does not mean freedom to speak on the public airwaves. We are telling the truth that our people need to hear. We are telling them fearlessly and boldly, and we are struggling against censorship. We are speaking out for you and your family and your family's future. Please help us by sending a donation of $40 or more and asking to become a subscriber to Free Speech. Those who send a donation of $300 or more will also receive our ADV broadcasts on audio cassette every week, just as they are broadcast over the air. Write to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. International listeners may send international reply coupons or an international postal money order. Send $40 or more and ask for a subscription to Free Speech. The address, National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you of the words of aviator and patriot Charles Lindbergh. It is our turn to guard our heritage from Mongol and Persian and Moor before we become engulfed in a limitless foreign sea. All foreign races stir restlessly. It is time to turn from our quarrels and build our white ramparts again.